The dead numbness is pushed from my hand and arm. After 30 seconds, I'm as good as new.
Please, be more careful with this, Creighton says. It's far more vital than you know.
I look to where he's pointing. My chest!
There's an explosion nearby. The tower sways and dust and rocks drop from the ceiling and walls. More rocks fall as another blast takes me off my feet. I use my telekinesis to stop their descent, and I fling them out the window.
They're searching for us, and it's not going to take long until they realize where we are, he says.
He looks at Ella, and then at me.
She's one of you, a member of the guard from Lorien.
But she's not old enough, I say,
shaking my head, unable to replace the younger version I've come to know with this older one.
I don't get it.
Do you know what an Eternus is?
I shake my head.
Show her, Ella.
While standing in front of me, Ella begins to change. Her arms shorten and her shoulders narrow. She loses 20 centimeters of height, and her weight drops significantly. The shrinking of her face shocks me the most, and quickly she looks like the tiny girl I've come to love.
She's an Eternus, Creighton says. She's able to move back and forth between different ages.
I didn't know that was possible, I stutter.
Ella's 11 years old, he says. She came with me on a second ship from Lorien that left after yours. She was just a baby, only hours old. Loridos, the last remaining elder, sacrificed himself so that Ella could assume his role and grow into his powers.
As I'm looking at Creighton, Ella slips her hand into mine, as she's done so many times before, but it feels different now. I glance over and see that she's returned to the older, taller version of herself. Recognizing my discomfort, Ella shrinks back down, the 4 years quickly melting away until she's 7 again.
She's the 10th child, he says, the 10th elder. We created a rumor about her backstory, her parents dying in a car accident, and we sent her here to live with you, to watch over you, and be the eyes I needed.
I'm sorry I couldn't tell you the truth, Marina, she says in her soft voice. But I'm the best secret keeper in the whole world, just like you said.
I know you are, I say.
I was just waiting for Adelina to give you your chest, she says, smiling.
Do you know who the 10th elder was? Creighton asks. Changing his age is how Loridos was able to live as long as he did, even after the other elders had passed away. Each time he grew old, he made himself young again, and assumed the vitality that comes with it.
Are you Ella's Sapon?
Only in the surrogate sense of the word. Since she was just born, she hadn't been assigned a Sapon yet.
I thought you were a Mogadorian, I say.
I know, but only because you misinterpreted the clues. This morning, when I was talking to Hector, I was trying to show you I was a friend.
But why didn't you just come and get me when you arrived? Why send Ella in?
I tried approaching Adelina first, but she cast me out the second she knew who I was, and we needed you to have your chest. I couldn't pull you away without it, he says. So I sent Ella in, and she started looking for it even before you asked her to. The Mogadorians have known your general location for a good while now, and I've done my best to keep them off your trail. Killing some? Well, killing most. But also planting stories in villages hundreds of miles away about kids doing amazing things, like about a boy who lifted a car above his head and a girl who could walk across a lake. It was working, until they discovered you were in Santa Teresa. But even then, they still didn't know which one you were. Then Ella found the chest, and you opened it, and that's when I came here, to talk to you in private. When you opened the chest, It led the Mogadorians right here.
Because I opened the chest?
Yes.
Go ahead. Open it up now.
I let go of Ella's hand and grab hold of the lock. I am sick, thinking that I'm able to open it on my own now that Adelina is dead. I remove the lock and toss the lid open. The small crystal is still glowing a faint blue.
Don't touch that, he says. The fact that it's glowing means a macrocosm is in orbit somewhere. If you touch it now, it will tell them exactly where you are. I don't know whose macrocosm is operational, but I'm pretty sure the Mogadorians have stolen somebody's, he finishes. I haven't the slightest idea of what he's talking about.
Macrocosm?
I ask.
He shakes his head, frustrated.
There isn't time to explain it all, he says. Relock it.
He opens his mouth to say more, but is interrupted by banging on the door at the bottom of the stairs. We can hear muffled bursts of foreign voices.
We have to go, Creighton says, rushing to the back of the room and grabbing a large black suitcase.
He flings it open, revealing 10 different guns, a handful of grenades, several daggers. He shrugs his coat to the floor and reveals a leather vest, and he rushes to strap every piece of weaponry to it before slipping his coat back on. The Mogadorians ram the door below with a heavy object, and we hear footsteps enter the stairwell. Creighton removes one of the guns and snaps a clip into it.
The burning symbol on the mountain, I say. Was it you?
He nods.
I waited too long, I'm afraid, and when you opened the chest, it became impossible to slip away under their gaze. So I created the biggest beacon I could, and now we have to hope the others have seen it, and that they're on their way. Otherwise,
he trails off.
Well, otherwise, we're out of options. We have to get to the lake now. It's our only chance. I have no idea what lake he's talking about or why he wants to go there, but my whole body is trembling. I just want to get away.
The footsteps are closer. Ella grabs hold of my hand, back to her 11-year-old self. Creighton pulls the slide on the gun, and I hear a bullet clicking into place. He aims it at the belfry's entryway.
You have a very good friend in town, he says.
Hector? I ask, suddenly understanding why the two of them were talking in the cafe this morning.
Creighton wasn't spreading lies, but rather telling the truth.
Yes, and let's hope he keeps his word.
Hector will, I say, certain that's true regardless of what Creighton has asked him to do.
It's in his name, I add.
Grab the chest, Creighton says.
I reach down and take the chest in my left arm just as we hear the footsteps reach the last curves of the stairwell.
Both of you, stay close to me, Creighton says,
his eyes moving from Ella to me.
She was born able to change ages, but she's young and hasn't developed any legacies yet. Keep her close, and don't let go of that chest.
Don't worry, Marina. I'm fast, she says, smiling.
You two ready?
Ready,
Ella says, tightening her hand around mine.
They're all going to be wearing body armor that would stop almost every bullet here on Earth, Creighton says. But I've soaked mine in Loricide, and there isn't a shield here that could stop them. I'm going to mow every damn one of them down.
His eyes narrow.
Keep your fingers crossed that Hector's outside the gates, waiting for us.
He'll be there, I say.
Then Creighton pulls the trigger, and he doesn't let go until every bullet's been fired.
Chapter 28. We keep the windows down, saying little, unnerved by the task ahead. Sam keeps a firm grip on the wheel as the highway winds through Virginia. You think Six will make it? Sam asks. I'm sure she'll make it, But who knows what she'll find?
That was a hell of a kiss you two had.
I open my mouth, and then shut it. A minute later, I say, she likes you too, you know.
Yeah, as a friend.
Actually, Sam, she likes you. Sam blushes.
Sure, I could tell by the way she shoved her tongue in your mouth.
She kissed you too, dude. I saw it. I slap him in the chest with the back of my hand, and I can see he's replaying the kiss in his mind. After I kissed her, I asked if she knew you liked her, and we're jerked over the double yellow line on the road.
You did what?
Dude, relax, don't kill us. Sam glides us back onto our side of the road. She said she liked you too. A devilish grin spreads across Sam's face.
Interesting. It's kind of hard to believe this, Sam finally says.
God, Sam, why would I lie about it?
No, I can't believe that this whole thing is real. That you're real, or that Six is real, or that a hostile race of aliens has scattered themselves across the planet, and nobody seems to know it. I mean, they've hollowed out a mountain in the middle of the state. How has it not been found? What did they do with all the dirt and rocks they removed? Even as scarcely populated as parts of West Virginia are, surely somebody had to stumble across it at some point. Hikers or hunters, pilots of small planes, what about satellite imaging? And who knows how many other base camps or outposts or whatever you want to call them they have on Earth. I just don't understand how they move about so freely.
I agree, I say. I don't know how either, but something tells me we probably don't know the half of it. You remember the very first conspiracy theory you told me?
No, Sam says.
We were talking about an entire Montana town being abducted, and you said the government allowed abductions in exchange for technology. Remember now?
Vaguely. Sure.
Well, that makes sense now. Maybe technology has nothing to do with it, and maybe the government isn't allowing abductions, but I really think some agreement has to be in place, because you're right, there's no way they're traveling unnoticed. There are way, way, way too many of them. Sam doesn't respond. I look over and see that he's smiling. Sam? I ask.
I was just thinking of where I might be at this exact moment if you guys hadn't come along. Probably alone in my basement, collecting more conspiracy theories, and wondering if my dad's still alive. That's how it was for years. But what's awesome is that I really do believe he's alive now. He's somewhere, John, I know it. And I know it because of you guys.
I hope so, I say. It's pretty cool that Henri came to Ohio to try to find him. And you and I became friends almost immediately. It's like fate. Sam smiles.
Or a cosmic aligning.
Nerd, I say. After a pause, Sam asks,
Hey, John, you're positive that skeleton in the well wasn't my dad, right?
Absolutely, dude. He was Lorik and huge, bigger than any human.
What's your best guess, then? Who was it?
I really don't know. I just hope he wasn't too important. 4 hours pass, and finally, we see a sign pointing the way to Anstead, 6 miles ahead. We fall silent. Sam makes the turn and navigates a precarious two-lane road that twists up the mountain until we pass the town's border. We drive through it and turn left at the only stoplight in town. Hawk's Nest, right?
Yep, a mile or two down the road, Sam says.
And it's there we'll find the map that Six drew 3 years ago. The map is exactly where Six said it would be, hidden at Hawk's Nest State Park, overlooking the New River. Exactly 47 steps down the Gisp Trail, Sam, Bernie Kosar, and I reach a tree with E6 deeply carved into its side. From there, we leave the trail, taking 30 steps past the tree to the right. That's followed by a hard left turn, and then, a tenth of a mile away, we see a tree that towers over the others. In the small gap at the base of its twisted trunk, safely tucked away in a black plastic box, is the map that leads to the cave. We make our way back to the SUV and drive another 15 miles, ultimately pulling down a muddy, deserted road. It's the closest any road can get us, 5 miles due north of the cave. Sam takes the address Six wrote out of his pocket and puts it in the glove compartment. On second thought, he removes it and puts it back into his pocket. As safe as anywhere, he says. I drop the Zatharis and some duct tape into Six's backpack that she left behind, and Sam slips the bag over his shoulders. I flip my dagger over in my hand, and then stuff it into my back pocket. We step out, and I lock the doors, Bernie Kosar running circles around my legs. There's only a few hours left of daylight, which doesn't leave us much time. Even with the benefit of my hands, I can't imagine finding the cave without the sun to help us along. Sam holds the map in his hands. At its right side, Six has drawn a heavy X. A winding path 5 miles long connects the X with where we are now, marked on the map's left side. Along the way, we'll skirt a riverbed while passing various landmarks noted for their physical descriptions, all of which are carefully marked to keep us on track. Turtle Rock, Fisherman's Pole, Circle Plateau, King's Throne, Lover's Kiss, Lookout Point. Sam and I lift our heads at the same time, and we both see the rock a quarter mile away with an uncanny resemblance to a turtle shell. Bernie Kosar barks. I guess we know which direction to head first, Sam says. And off we go, following the path set by the map. There's no trail, nothing that might allude to these mountains having been trampled by beings of another world, or even by beings of this one. Once we reach Turtle Rock, Sam spots a fallen tree that hangs over the cliffside at a 45-degree angle, and thus looks like a fishing pole, patiently waiting for a bite, and we hike on, following the trail as the sun lowers in the western sky. Each step taken is another chance to turn around and walk away, but neither of us does. You're a hell of a friend, Sam Good, I tell him. You're not so bad yourself, he replies, and then, I can't stop my hands from shaking. After passing King's Throne, which is a tall, slender rock that looks like a high-backed chair, I immediately spot two tall trees leaning against one another at slight angles, their branches appearing like arms wrapped around each other in an embrace, and I smile, for a brief moment, forgetting how terribly scared I am. Only one more to go, Sam says, pulling me back into the clutches of reality. We reach Lookout Point 5 minutes later. All told, the hike has taken 1 hour and 10 minutes, and the shadows are long and stretched as the last light of dusk drains away. Without warning, a deep growl bellows beside me. I look down. Bernie Kosar's teeth are flashed, his fur bristling along his spine, his eyes pointed in the direction of the cave. He begins backing away from it. It's okay, Bernie Kosar, I say, patting his back. Sam and I drop to the ground and lay on our stomachs, both staring across the small valley at the cave's almost indiscernible entrance. It's far larger than I'd imagined, probably 20 feet wide and tall, but also much better hidden. There's something covering it, a net or a tarp maybe, making it blend in with its surroundings. You'd have to know it's there to be able to see it. Perfect location, Sam whispers. Totally. My nervousness quickly turns to full-blown terror. As mysterious as the cave is, one thing I know for sure is that there'll be no shortage of things, weapons, beasts or traps that could kill us. I could die within the next 20 minutes, and Sam could too. Whose idea was this anyway? I ask. Sam snorts. Yours?